Hello, 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 beautiful people, and welcome back to another episode of the USL Show. And if you're watching this live and breathe, you also just got done watching Vermont versus Lexington, and oh my God. we'll hop into some US Open Cup action first, but before we get into that, Phil, man, how you doing?
Yeah, like you said, just catching my breath after an amazing opening round. Probably one of the best matches that we've seen early on in any Open Cup, and for it to happen in Vermont with what that club is doing in USL League Two, I think their ambitions aim much higher than that, and amazing to see them go through. Sad that it's at the expense of Lexington, but they gave us, wow, an absolute classic. So yeah, that is occupying my brain at the moment.
Ryan?
Yeah, I'm doing well, especially since I had a good feeling about, I think, Savannah and Vermont on my betting, that I am having like four separate parlays for the evening, and I'm playing like both sides of the Vermont-Lexington game, so I always came out on top, so feeling pretty good.
John?
Doing well, loving everything about the Open Cup madness right now. Loving the fact that gambling's been legal for about 3 weeks and Ryan's just full sicko mode.
Hey, the playing game for the NCAA tournament today, I had a parlay miss out by one rebound on the team that won, and I was mad.
He's on the prop bets as well. I was going to say, I did enjoy watching people bet on the Open Cup because it felt like solidarity when people were betting on the US Open Cup. So the sickos out there, keep it up.
For sure. Before we jump too far, I want to go ahead and thank our wonderful, beautiful patrons: John Hunt, Frank Anthony, Aaron J., Christopher Cohn, Harry Austin, John Fuller, Michael Fuchs, who needs a hug in the chat, Joshua Deuter, and Noah Telford. Thank you all so much for supporting us. And hey, there's been a little bit of miscommunication. Some of you have signed up for the free version of the Patreon. We appreciate it. You still get access to some things early, but the paid version is where you get early access for the love of the game and how you actually monetarily help us out. So if you want to monetarily help us out, that will be in the description. Listen, I want to hop into the US Open Cup in a second, because we can talk about that for a while, but I want to go ahead and I want to talk about it's not the more important cup, but it's equally as fun, the Jägermeister Cup, which, I mean, say what you want about the just how funny it being called the Jägermeister Cup is. Also, just the fact that it's a real deal recognized, you know, brand is pretty cool in the grand scheme of things. So League One Cup is now the Jägermeister Cup for a shot at glory.
That's like the real coup in all this. I think getting a title sponsor for this was always going to be important, in that the League Cup, I mean, when you think about cup competitions abroad, even that have a lot bigger base, a lot more history behind them, they have title sponsors. So getting a title sponsor for this competition is big. A shot at glory is unironically amazing marketing for the Jägermeister Cup. Like, that is, it is so good. It shows that there is like actual buy-in from Jägermeister. It's not like it wasn't just a mailed in thing. They didn't just cash a check like from Jäger. So I think in general, they are approaching this in the way that it should be. And it does make me think, like, man, what if another cup competition that struggled commercially in the United States had secured a title sponsor? Maybe we wouldn't be having the conversations about it that we are, but that's just me anyways. No, it is a good move, and I'm excited for League One, and maybe with such a big title sponsor we see an expansion of the competition next year.
And just knowing how sponsorship names always work within just stuff, this will be the permanent name for the competition for the test of time. Everyone will just it that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the impressive thing is that, like, Jägermeister is an international brand. it's easy to dunk on it because of the associations you have with college kids and Jaeger bombs and everything like that. But this is an organization that's sponsored Bundesliga teams. I think they've had some F1 sponsorship. They've been the official shot of the NHL for a couple of years. Like, they don't throw their money around unless they feel like they're going to get eyeballs with a competition that matters to people. So to have it tied into the competition, the USL League One Cup, is impressive. On the expansion thing, I think that's kind of always been the intention. I think, from what I've heard at least, the championship teams probably weren't ready en masse to commit to this, to commit to changing up the schedule in that way. Once we get the test run this year, really feel it out, this has the potential to be something really cool. That's a compliment to the Open Cup. Like, we're seeing it tonight that the magic of tournament competition is something that draws eyeballs in a major way. So getting Jägermeister involved, adding legitimacy, adding revenue stream, huge deal.
I know somebody put it in our chat and the jokes are everywhere, but I do unironically want to see the cup of the Jägermeister Cup just be a cup that you can drop into another cup. I want it like I need air to breathe. Like, so bad. But seriously though, it's super cool, right? Just like, there's a lot there, like you mentioned, with the associations you have with Jaeger, right? One of the just dumbest stories that I remember is they made a Jaeger coffee. I don't know if y'all remember, like, a Jaeger, like, coffee flavored liquor. And they did a thing at one of the bars I went to. It was a Jaeger promotion where if you took a shot of it and you posted a picture of it, they gave you a full bottle for free. And so, like, me and all my buddies did it. So we took home, like, 5 bottles of coffee Jaeger. And it was the worst thing I ever had. But we had it. And because why wouldn't we?
It's college.
College. But super cool. And if the buy-in is real from the championship clubs, especially now that they can see it can get a real market, I think that's cool. I wonder how much of that came down to, like, Carling and Carabao and stuff like that. I wonder how much of the USL said, you can name this and people will say it. And whether it's a legitimate trophy or not, people will talk about your brand a lot.
Like, I was curious, I also say, if you're one of the MLS people who was like, oh, you complain about the fixture congestion, that's an intellectually dishonest argument, and I don't want to talk about it more, but stop doing that.
Yeah, someone said, like, people are treating this differently just because USL teams are still participating in the Open Cup, and I was like, yes. Like,
right.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself.
You actually nailed it. You nailed it. In fact, all teams have stayed in the competition despite, I think another key part of this is that there aren't any extra matches. This is just a part of the League One.
They reoriented their schedule to, like, be able to fit the cup, which if MLS wanted to add the League's Cup, maybe they should have considered that instead of making their playoffs last 8 months.
Hey, they changed it after they realized that doing 2 legs 2 months apart was not a good idea.
Best of 7.
Every round.
We will be the NHL and the NBA at the same time.
Well, hey, let's get into some US Open Cup. And I'm going to just rattle through all the results that we have so far. Chattanooga FC was the first team to go down. Chattanooga FC loses 1-0 to Miami United. Brave SC of League 2 goes down to Savannah Clovers FC of Nisa. Thank you. Ford Madison FC takes down Duluth FC. League 1 versus League 2 action 2-0. Cheney does backflips. Vermont Green wins 4-3 versus Lexington. We all watched it. South Georgia's Tormenta is currently up 1-0 over FC America CFL Spurs.
Can we pause for a second on that? Do you like? Does anybody know what's up with FC America CFL Spurs?
That was a merger of two teams, FC America and CFL Spurs. They don't say what CFL stands for, but considering that the team is from Florida, I'm going to take a guess and say Central Florida for CFL. Oh, that would be the like Occam's razor part for me. But the big thing that stuck out to me was that they have Graham Zusi as an alum.
Huh. But the condition of the merger was that, like, we're just smashing the names together. We're not dropping anything.
This is the first, like, this is, like, one of the true united teams we have in the country. And I'm disappointed they didn't actually take the united name.
True. Moving on, Westchester United of League 2 is currently down 2-0 to NISA's Maryland Bobcats. And Tulsa Athletic, the world's and U.S. sweetheart, NPSL, down 1-0 to Northern Colorado Hailstorm of League 1. And Austin FC 2-0, 4-0 SC 0. Austin FC in hot water on social media because who isn't nowadays? So... those are your updates.
But the record show that MLS Next Pro is currently 0-1 in this competition.
Yeah, Chattanooga FC proving that you either die, hell yeah, NPSL Pro brother, or live long enough to see yourself become MLS Next Pro brother.
I did watch Chattanooga FC in person 2 weeks ago, and half of their team is still like not signed due to like a lot of like waivers and like stuff like that, but also that team was bad, like really bad. So much so that I was comparing it to last year's NISA team. Was shocking how bad it was. So I don't know.
They signed a couple of USL guys and they were like a squad player from Rio Grande Valley, or again, I'm trying to think of other examples, like really didn't impress with the acquisitions, but they have a couple players you like. I'm thinking about Taylor Gray, for instance, like up top, somebody who's a real legend at the squad. It makes it impressive that Miami did what they did, like scoring immediately and holding that lead for a good 80 minutes.
And give the products to Miami's goal, a 35-yard free kick, which was an absolute banger that should be on SportsCenter's top 10.
Now here's where I put the debate show part. Which was better, Cam Lancaster's free kick or the free kick in the Chattanooga match?
I would give it to
because John Pajoy's banger was a banger, but right in the sun.
That's fair.
True.
You could tell the goalie was lost on that.
Yeah. I think he thought it was going over as well, and it just like hissed the bar on its way in. It was, it was very nice. I don't know. There's something so stunning about it. Like I was standing in my kitchen because I was watching on my phone while I was making dinner, and my jaw just dropped like when that one went in. Because it's like, why is he even lining up to shoot from there? Just deposits it in the top corner. But yeah, that was. I would say, given the fact it was the winner as well, it gets the vote.
Fair. We will be talking about the People's Champ soon, Carson, very soon. But let's I just fully want to update. Northern Colorado has gotten a second goal. Irvin Parra, always cool to see. Always
love a good Irvin Parra goal.
Yes. There's few things that make me happier. Let's see. I want to just fully flush out the Vermont versus Lexington thing because we've been hinting at it and I just want to talk about it. So who wants to open it up?
Yeah. I mean, just to lay the context for anybody who didn't see the game right off the bat, Vermont Green, a USL League Two team, albeit one that's really run as professional as it gets at that tier. And a team that comes in with a social message, right? Like they're trying to be the first ever net zero soccer club. They've got a climate justice, a social justice sign right on the end line for everybody to see. Minutes into this game, they score a goal off a corner kick at the far post. A couple minutes later, they kind of run the same routine from the opposite side, score another one. Lexington gets back in it. You get another goal for Vermont. Really well worked. And it's Jacob Lavovitz, somebody who has the League One experience. Then it becomes the comeback. Lexington gets back into this game. Somehow they allow another far post corner goal, which like somebody needs to audit that on the training pitch. It becomes a defensive battle. Cameron Lancaster scoring bangers. Stop it. Like, we don't want to blow the final whistle because there's a flare or something. It gets weird. But hey, Vermont does the job. Unreal game. Go watch the highlights if that's a thing. Just magic of the cup personified.
Like we said at the top of the show, like 4,500 people turning out on a Tuesday to any soccer match, like, is big in the lower leagues. People turning out, 4,500 people turning out to a 3,500 cap stadium that they modified for this game because they anticipated such big crowds. In the cold on a Tuesday night, like all of that, all of the context there, it's just like there clearly is something very special being built in Vermont. And I think it has rightly gotten attention, but I think like they have definitely captured the imagination of people tonight with what they pulled off. And they showed that they didn't have a ton of time to bring something together for this match. Like the USL 2 teams are not in season for a few months. Like they are piecing things together.
Majority of their roster can't play because of NCAA rules. So like even their normal roster that's all played together is not legally allowed to play in the game.
So, yeah, I think in general, like with all the context and a strong Lexington side, like it was not it was changed, but not like significantly enough to say, you know, they fielded the kids. Like it was a very strong Lexington
Cameron
side.
Lancaster started the game. Like,
yeah, I mean, the proof's in the pudding. And we somehow left this match with Lexington exiting the cup and still getting an answer to the question, can Cameron Lancaster do it on a cold night in Vermont, which he can, but still wasn't enough to get them through. I got more and more upset almost watching the game because it's like, man, this should be amongst the magic of the cup. Like it should be truly, you know, we should all be feeling it to the fullest extent in a full open cup with all of the teams participating in the sense that they should. And just disappointing now that, you know, it's in this sort of modified format. That being said, you know, Vermont Green to the CONCACAF Champions Cup, who says no?
Also, it is 29 degrees in Burlington, Vermont.
Damn it, Kaylor, you took my... But no, like seriously, if you're looking at like just teams who are going to enter into the next round, if you're Rhode Island, if you're Hartford, you're looking at Vermont and thinking not only is this a tasty tie, this is a potential tie that could really upset and derail your very own cup run on just to start your season. And like you look at teams who have gone through the Open Cup as an expansion side, how Seattle was able to bank so many U.S. Open Cup titles in their early part. If you are Rhode Island, you want to take the Open Cup seriously to really just legitimize your season and just really push that forward. And even looking at outside of just soccer, Vermont, the Catamounts that where they played this past tonight on their soccer field, they play Duke in basketball later this week. And if Vermont can upset Duke in addition to this win that they had tonight, it might be the best 72 hours in just Vermont sports history.
With a team with a UK right on the front of the shirt. I mean, come on. Is anybody real? Basically, it's the first week of the season for a lot of teams, and we don't know if they are actually real or not. Appreciate you hopping in, Juan. Thank you. Hey, loving what you're doing down in Houston. Much love, our friend. Let's get into some matches from the week before, and how about a little tactics show to start it all off.
Welcome into the USL Tactic Show, where today I want to break down Sacramento and how they ended up beating a Miami defense that has been very stout and very organized to date in 2024. Miami sits in a deep block 4-4-2, one that Sacramento's front five in the way that they attack in 3-2-5 could have taken advantage and stretched the defense, but it took some originality from the Republic to get there. In this game, they ended up going long on 15% of their pass attempts, but these weren't just empty heaves upfield. Most of these passes were switches across the face of the pitch that forced Miami into rotation, forced them to get unsettled from that block and move from side to side. It didn't always pay off in chances. You're seeing a couple moves here where Sacramento doesn't get a shot on goal. However, as the game went on, as Russell Cicerone was able to get touches in more dangerous areas, as you're seeing here, the Republic began to grow in the danger they created. You're seeing plays where the interchange of their attacking line, the way that their wingbacks get involved, consistently force the opposition to lose the shape that is so valuable to them. Now, as we move on into the second half, Sacramento got Rodrigo Lopez into the game in the central midfield. Here, Lopez, who was brilliant as always as a passer in this match, is dropping deep. In doing so, he's drawing Miami up, opening a hole within the heart of their defense, and allowing Nick Ross to work inside out. They don't need a switch here. They're able to work into zone 14, pass it wide, then swing the ball back in for what turns out to be the winning goal. Part of that is Trevor Amon being brilliant, but part of it is very good strategy. And last week, Miami was able to get a win by playing direct through the lines over an over-aggressive press. Sacramento is a team that's moderate. They're very good in block. They're very good in the way they press in the 3-4-3. But look how they refuse to overcommit in the center areas. Their central midfielders certainly are following Miami's players, but they're not losing the shape. They're staying firm, and they're ultimately making sure that their team will not be beat over the top. This is the sort of brilliance that Sacramento brings on a consistent basis, and it's why they should be a favorite in the West.
Yeah, I want to start on the Miami side, because I feel like that one might be the shorter conversation, but I still think it's just as interesting. Like you mentioned, John, Miami's proving to be a hard team to break down, especially early on the season. Whether they can last for 32 match or 34 matches, that's to be seen. But stealing points early and often, that can get you a long way for a playoff push. Do you think that this is easy for them? Not easy, but do you think is that something that is able to be repeated over and over and over again to hopefully get some points? Because against a team that's not Sacramento, I don't know if they can break it down like they were able to.
I think the thing with Miami is that they understand this isn't the most talented or experienced roster, and that's okay. Like, you have to lean into what you have. You have to lean into the fact that this team wants to go young and develop players, and they've decided we're going to sit in two banks of four, we're going to really pack it in and play tight, and you're going to have to beat us. And in that process, they're drawing teams up and opening up the ability to beat you on the counterattack. Against a team like Colorado Springs in week one that wants to press, that much more space to beat you on the counterattack to play over the top of you. So I think Miami kind of is just laying the trap for everybody. They know that in a league that is getting more possessive, trying to play the ball on the ground a lot more often, lean into the press, if they zag, that's going to catch some teams out. And against Sacramento, who we're going to talk about, it's not going to work because the Republic are that talented and have that many variations within the way that they play and the way that they attack. But Miami, even if they finish last, they're not going to be a team that's easy to beat.
The one moment where the game could have gone like a slightly different way was when Andrew Booth played an absolutely ridiculous ball in behind, and I believe it was Gagliardi, not goalkeeper Gagliardi, but forward Gagliardi, who ran onto it and probably should have scored. Vidiello, like, obviously stands tall and I think makes like a triple save. Technically, Miami FC get all three of their opta-defined like big chances in that match off of that one pass, but Booth is like that guy, sort of like in midfield, and it is going to be direct. It's going to be like they're going to sit deep. I think what's scary about Sac Republic is the patterns that they were playing and just like the way that they were finding ways to pick the lock against Miami, like it is concerning because they have so many options. And yeah, credit to Miami for keeping them to one goal. There's a world in which this game ends like as an absolute, like, I mean, it was a shooting gallery for much of the time for Sacramento. And yeah, we already, the goalkeeper like had quite a good game as well. That kept it respectable, but yeah, overall, I think this was sort of like the biggest gap, and it is a, in terms of quality between two USL teams, and like credit to Notarino for sort of admitting what they are and finding a way to play effectively and keep games close.
Yeah, and we'd be remiss not to mention that Trevor Amon, 3 goals, already atop the Golden Boot tally right now, and it just seems like he just finds a way to score like he did in League One.
I mean, like you mentioned, like John mentioned, he's also just unreal.
It's so unfair to have Jack Gurr and him in the same team. Like that, I don't know. USL, like, please intervene. There's got to be some kind of roster rule there that a crosser as good as Jack Gurr and a header as good as Trevor Amon should not be allowed to play for the same team.
Well, you know, when I talked to Colin Shuttler on For the Glove of the Game last week, I talked to him about that because the first goal for Trevor Amon in that match comes down from the left-hand side, as opposed for which I believe in that match was Sanchez. And it was just one of those things that it was the first time a cross from the left-hand side comes in and they score. And this is just one of those things that and weirdly enough, Sacramento are a team that they feel old school in the sense that it feels like a death by a thousand crosses. Cause like it feels old school in that way. But like we mentioned, you know, you have Roro, you have other guys up the middle. I mean, Cicerone can put in a good cross, but he can also play it up the middle. They have just options and it's so fun.
Sacramento's real strength last year was kind of jumping out of the gates, getting an early lead, and then demolishing you because they were so good defensively. They've not done that yet, and I think that's something to watch out for. There was a shape that they went to late in the Orange County game where they put Damian Villadaire and Jonathan Ricketts up as the wingers next to Amon. So basically using two fullbacks up there, and it made the defense impenetrable unless you're Colin Shuttler scoring on a corner because insanity. Like, the depth that this team has, the way that they can change up their lineup to cater to a certain matchup is going to be immense down the stretch.
Yeah. Just yeah. Disgusting.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and move on. And I want to talk about, I guess I want to lump two things together. I want to lump Phoenix Monterey and North Carolina versus Loudoun, because the story here is that we are having some actual championship hangovers going on. And yes, you can say what you want about Phoenix roster construction. Team doesn't really get better. They lose some of their best players. But North Carolina absolutely got better. But just like we've been saying for a while now, Loudoun's probably real. Like, they're a good team. Forget about, you know, the chess piece crest that they have. If you take away the crest and say, look at this team, you believe in it a lot more. But still, 3-1 to Loudoun is crazy.
Strays. I like the crest.
Wait, are you saying you don't like that shirt?
No, I love awesome. It. What I'm saying is if you rip the badge and the name off of the roster.
I thought the Loudoun brand was catching the strays, but I get what you're saying now.
I thought you were having to go at the shirt that had the crest on. I was like, no. I love that.
No, I love the dark Pegasus.
That black hit looked slick. Yeah. It's
great.
Besides, Keller, don't you own an unbranded Loudoun shirt anyways?
Yes. I spent the $5 and I'm a happy owner of an unbranded Loudoun kit. But What I'm saying though is that, like, if this, if you put this Loudon team and strip the name off it and said, look at this, you probably believe in it a lot more, but everybody's like, haha, Loudon bad. But North Carolina got dismantled, and Phoenix, yes, it's 1-0. We can talk about Monterey if they're legit or not, but that was not a close 1-0. That was a very much like a 3-1, 1-0, if that makes any kind of sense.
Gosh, well, I'm going to go to Loudon first, because I wrote about Loudon, and I know John in the power rankings as well, like Loudon shot up the rankings.
All in.
I think this is different than like the People's Champ Loudon last year, because watching the way that Loudon play, like you said, Kayla, like if you take away the fact that it says Loudon United and you just showed someone them playing this year, they play some of the best football in the league. Like, and I put that up against anybody. The addition of the veterans in this team has given Elmed Carr and Zach Ryan like such freedom to do what they do, because Skundrich is doing the hard yards like in midfield. Robbie Dambro is like advancing the ball up the wing. Like, these guys are serious. And like you said, like North Carolina held Charleston goalless in the opening game. Like, this is not a soft touch team. They're very good. We know that they're a championship caliber roster. Like, this was not they came up from League One and just aren't at the races. This is, I think Loudon are actually very legit. And when you've got the confident finishers up top, like Elmed Carr and Zach Ryan, as long as you are staying like, you know, firm at the back, like, you are going to win a lot of these games where you're just lethal and the other team isn't. In North Carolina's defense, they probably should have had, like, they probably should have kept it closer than they did. They had some very good chances, and there's another world in which this game ends like 3-3 or even 4-3. So I don't want to like discredit what North Carolina did, because I think they also played a very good game, but this Loudon side and the manner of the goals they score, they are very good. To be clicking this early in the season offensively, you can see that a lot of teams are not doing that. So anyways, I think I'm joining the Loudon hype train this year.
What's interesting is Loudon has an identical start to this season as they did last year. They had a 3-1 win over Memphis to open up last season, and then oddly got a draw against San Antonio this year, which they have a 3-1 win over North Carolina and a 2-2 draw against San Antonio. They're now just a goal better than what they were last season.
With Loudon, and in that match specifically, like, if you think about North Carolina the week before, they came out with that 3-4-3 press. They shut down the Charleston battery, the reigning Eastern Conference champs, a team that I think if you polled 100 USL fans, people would have thought would have the best offense in the East. So for Loudon to go out and do what they did, very much limit them, stifle them with the press, and destroy them on the way that they were attacking, getting Elmed Carr so involved throughout the pitch, working leftward to Kwame Awuwa on that left side, completely impressed by how they performed. Ryan Martin has been a manager who I think we've loved, who people who know the league know that he does a great job with fairly limited resources, and he's got a real philosophy. And when he's playing with 19-year-olds on loan from DC United, it's hard to get that philosophy in place. And beyond the attacking additions, like, you got to talk about Skundrich, you got to talk about McCabe. In the back line, getting Keegan Hughes and Jacob Erlinson, two players who were crucial to Columbus Crew 2's championship game run in MLS Next Pro, really smart player acquisition to get two defenders who come in with that innate sense of chemistry, who started half a dozen games with each other last season. So everything top to bottom really working for Loudon right now. As you mentioned, Phil, bombed them up the power rankings a ton this week because I'm really buying what they're selling.
Real quick from the chat, this is a USL show, so we're not focusing as much on Savannah, but I will say McLeod look absolutely incredible. And Hargreaves was great to watch as well for Savannah. Super fun match to watch. Update on the U.S. Open Cup. Tormenta goes final, wins 1-0 over FC America, FCL Spurs. Hilarious. Maryland Bobcats of NISA take down Westchester United 2-0. Northern Colorado, my word, goes up 3-0. Marky Hernandez with a goal. And Austin FC 2 is still scoreless versus Faro SC. One thing I want to mention with this Loudoun team before we move on over to the Phoenix side. We talked about it last year with what Ryan said too. This is an identical start. Last year, they kind of fell apart, and it was one of those things that I kind of kept saying as sort of a joke, but they kind of kept going in and just beating teams because I said they were too young to care. They were like so naive that they didn't understand what they were doing, as crazy as it was, just kind of being young and dumb. And then the league hit them hard. Well, guess what? Young kids have a full year of experience, and they brought in veterans. They know what to expect from this league, and they're fully professional. Also, something that needs to be talked about, they had almost 4,000 fans, which is almost a 50% increase on last year's average. Loudoun is doing a real push to be a part of the of this ecosystem, right? They are pushing to be a part of their community. And it's the – I don't want to get into the soccer wars, yada, 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 but – it's one thing we always said with RGV is that if they just tried a little bit harder to connect, right? We wanted them to do that. Loudoun's really doing that. I'm super excited to see what they can do if they can keep building on it.
Yeah, and credit to Jordan Stewart and that ownership group there who's, I mean, done an amazing job in a really short amount of time. Like, last season wasn't their first full season under the new ownership. That was a late transition, kind of in the way that we're seeing with Las Vegas this year. And I mean, they've shaped up Loudoun in a really major way that ought to impress everybody across the league.
And update, 4OSC just scored.
Good.
It's 1-0, 4OSC.
There's a real chance that MLS Next Pro gets swept tonight.
I didn't pick 4O to beat Austin, but I did beat El Farolito to beat Timbers 2, so yeah. Here's hoping.
At least Timbers 2 was able to tweet out the name of the competition.
True.
Can I be mean to Phoenix now?
Yeah, you can be. We can be mean to Phoenix now. We've been kind of mean to Phoenix all off season.
This is a good point. Yeah, but did you watch Phoenix against Monterrey? Because they deserve to be treated poorly.
I mean, it's
like,
not
And granted, Monterrey might be a wagon. Like, after what Monterrey did to El Paso midweek, after what they did to Phoenix, dominating in the press, making Rafael Baca look like he's in his prime, we should give some attention there. But Phoenix Rising, they don't have a striker who's interested in making any sort of run at the net, probably. Both of their central midfielders have been unbelievably negative as passers. Really, Lawrence Wyke is the only buddy who's looking upfield and trying to play any pass from the back. And they got some momentum in the second half of that game. They were able to find Panos Armanakis with the ball at his feet. He's somebody who you can joke about, but he's an unreal player. Like, the talent he has, the skill he has can be a definitional thing for Phoenix. But when no one else around him is making the runs, playing the passes, drawing the attention of the defense, it's incredibly hard for him to have any room to create. I was pretty disheartened by the outing for Rising, and I think it laid bare the fact that they've not replaced a couple of the key pieces from the title run.
I guess what I would like to say is you don't replace Danny Trejo. You know, we've done the funny Moneyball meme, haha, replace him in the aggregate several times now, but they didn't replace any of the aggregate, like, at all.
I think the thing, it's like, Trejo wasn't even the guy in the box who was doing anything. Like, that was Arteaga, and he also didn't get replaced. Like, Carlos Harvey was the progressor in the middle of the pitch. He didn't get replaced. So when you're losing all three of those pieces, it really can snowball, and we're seeing that now.
I think for Phoenix to, like, Remy Cabral, this was, like, a little bit worrying in just how much he struggled to get involved. Like, I think he took just the one, it was one touch in Monterey Bay's penalty area in the time that he was on the field, lost 7 of his 10 duels and lost possession 3 times. Like, he's just not quite up to speed. I still think that Remy probably comes good, like, in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And I think we are yet to see the best of him, but Monterey Bay really made Phoenix look average. And like you said, John, in the press, it was just like, I mean, impressive. The goal they score is off of pressure, and two players who typically don't really wilt under any sort of press, Rocco Rios Novo and Hernandez, like, they give the ball away cheaply. Like, Rios Novo kind of gives Hernandez the ball in a bad spot. Hernandez is forced into this sort of like hospital pass that gets intercepted by Rebillard and then just lays it off. And Baca, the strike from Baca is he just makes no mistake, like, absolutely, absolutely drills it home. But Monterey Bay, they, like you said, like what they did to El Paso in terms of, they go behind early and you're sort of thinking like, okay, like, same old Monterey Bay. Well, from there, they were far the better side. They created a ton of chances against El Paso. They probably should have won the game. They end up just drawing. And then in Phoenix, they showed again, like, they didn't give up that much to Phoenix. Phoenix's game plan, you can definitely sort of, you know, you can say like that it was sort of like Armanakis and like shrug. But I think overall, like, what Yallop has done with Monterey Bay, when we were all thinking, like, the common wisdom was Monterey Bay haven't done enough to change. They haven't done enough to improve. And yet, like, they were just the better side. They probably should have gone into halftime like up 2 or 3, I think. Chance creation wise, like, they really, I think they limited Phoenix from creating like the dangerous chances that we're used to seeing from Phoenix. So all in all, the one last thing I wanted to say is that they really limited what Phoenix did on the wings, where Edgardo Rito was so involved in their first match, and he just like wasn't able to really influence things as much as he had that first match in this one. So they really nullified Phoenix in a lot of areas, and made a lot of players who are going to be very influential for Phoenix this year look average.
One more thing on Monterey. Yeah. Maury Doner at right back, Walmer Martinez at left back. Unbelievable matches from them. And I do think John Fuller in the chat putting out a good point that if you look at Phoenix, it was kind of a Jekyll and Hyde thing where against Birmingham, they were making chances for fun and it was just that issue around the net. In the Monterey game, they got 0.3 expected goals. So who is the real Phoenix? And if you're coming up against a team that presses well and has solid defensive fullbacks, are Rising just impotent? That's the big question.
What's one thing that I found interesting between this and another team that's struggling to start their year in the Eastern Conference in Pittsburgh is that both Phoenix and Pittsburgh have started the year goalless. You have to go back to 2018 when Pittsburgh began their year goalless. They had 0-0 draws against Nashville and Penn FC. But for Phoenix, on their point, they have to go back to 2017 when they began their year for their first two games goalless with a 0-1 loss to Toronto and a 2-0 loss to Real Monarchs. So it's been a while since we've seen just starts to the season like this from both of these teams, who, like, by all accounts were just more uncharacteristic beginnings for just what we're used to seeing out of their histories.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to see what Monterey does. I'm a little bit hesitant on the El Paso front, and this isn't an El Paso breakdown. Exactly. But live by the wing back, die by the wing back, but also are they really
El Paso's breaking down on their own already?
I was gonna say I'm having an El Paso breakdown if that's
I mean living by the when I say living by the wing back, I mean they're like trying to live by the wing back, but right now they're alive by the wing back and dying by the wing back. It's like I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's the yin and yang of Lucas Stauffer is their best player and the way that they play makes them more vulnerable. So it's like, you know.
Yeah. Give me that 4-3-3.
Yeah. Let's go ahead over to San Antonio versus Tampa Bay, which this one was kind of nuts. There I want to just San Antonio putting their pregame graphic as the goalkeeper is just foul. That is just outright nasty behavior.
I'm not gonna lie. I was eating it up, and I trust me. I'm no San Antonio fan, but I absolutely love the fact. Like it was clear trolling. There was no other way to take it.
And then from there, I mean, we get a really fun match out of it. You know, there was some interesting refereeing call. I think you could say that both teams could have been down to 10 men, which in my head makes it even. But Phil, you commented on it. You're like, he should be sent off. He's going to score a goal later. He set up the game tying assist. So I don't know, but
it's the most obvious thing. Like when it happens, you just know that player is going to have an influence of some kind. I think you're right in that, like, on the balance, there's probably a couple of, like, yellows that could have been shown. The only outright red that should have been shown was Hernandez, because he looks for Guillen and throws an elbow in his face. There's no way he should have been on the pitch, which then Tampa Bay plays completely differently after that, like, and probably aren't drawn into some of the challenges, where I think him staying on the field actually made it worse. Like, where both teams were then sort of retaliating against each other for the rest of the game. But all that being said, yeah, as soon as Hernandez stayed on, you're like, you know, he's gonna have something to say about the result here. And yeah, ends up setting up the equalizer.
This was a game where I think San Antonio looked a little bit frail defensively, and that's the second straight week that's happened after the 2-2 draw with Loudon. They're very bad about defending in the channels. They can get exposed behind their wingbacks quite easily in the way that Phoenix was kind of having Cal Jennings and Manuel Arteaga make runs into the same spaces, really doubled down on that in an effective way. If you're Tampa Bay, the inability to close out, the fact that you didn't really want to make the changes to seal the game off against what is a potent San Antonio team, as we saw, that was probably a mistake. And if you are familiar with the reactions of Scottish football fans to the Robbie Nielsen hiring, this could be something to look out for, possibly, for the Rowdies. On the San Antonio side, though, you love the late changes from Alan Marcina, really throwing players forward. I thought Bora Noguera was unreal at the end, like a ball of energy in the midfield, got that insane goal to get them back into the match. So coming out of it feeling better about the Rowdies in San Antonio, but I'm still sold on the project that Alan Marcina is undertaking.
I did think it was a little weird that the Rowdies back three weren't that good. I hate to kind of like say it like that, but it was just very strange when you have those three players back there and Aaron Guillen is doing like the heavy lifting in terms of like clearances and head at like winning aerial duels and stuff, and not Forrest Lasso, who's marshalling everything. So yeah, I think like that just struck me as a little odd, like on the stat sheet, when you're thinking like, okay, well, he's at the center of that back line and should be maybe dominating and like being a little bit more proactive. I thought it was really surprising, Rowdy's approach, just in terms of how direct they ended up being. I mean, They more only than, complete more like than,
25%. More than 25% of their passes were long passes. They only completed 250 across the whole game, which is really low. Like, they were just lumping it.
Yeah, it was, that was strange to see. I think up front, like, they are as dangerous as anybody, but I think they are, they're giving a little bit of that, like, you know, Ferrari in the front, like, and like jalopy at the back sort of like vibe right now. Not really sure how it'll play out, but in this one, obviously, I think the legs just go late on and they, and they kind of played into San Antonio's hands, hashtag mentality monsters. So,
yeah. Quick update. Tulsa Athletics just scored, making it 4-1 going into the 90th. And then halftime, 4-0 SC up 1-0 on Austin FC 2. One thing you kind of mentioned with the back line of Guillen, Lasso, and Doherty. Yeah, Forrest Lasso is a monster of a human. Like, if you've never stood beside him, he is bigger than you think he is. He is just a monster. But also, he's a walking red card. He's as nice as they come off the field, but he is a walking red card. And the amount of foul and yellow card trouble he got himself in last year, I can't help but wonder if the Guillen going and, you know, winning a lot of stuff is because either, I don't know if it's because Forrest is necessarily reckless or if it's because he is such a massive human that refs are looking for it a little bit more and he gets called more. I wonder if they're trying to manage those, that card accumulation, because he's due for not one, but two, you know, accumulations throughout the year. That's the one that I could kind of imagine. I mean, you also have to imagine that any back line with Forrest Lasso in it, arguably the best defender in USL history, is a good one.
Oh, I mean, he's great. And I think since he came back from Sweden, I haven't necessarily seen like him at his best. I don't think, I'm not exactly sure like what has gone on. If it's a confidence thing, if it's a fitness thing, like I'm not really sure, but it just, ever since he came back from Sweden, it just, something's felt a little bit off.
Well, I think he's lost a step. I genuinely think he's a step slower. I think he leans into his physicality in a way that, as you rightly talk about, Kaylor, can render itself as fouls, can put him into positions where he's lunging at the ball a little bit, and that's going to create gaps across the defense. And that's not to say that Forrest Lasso isn't still an elite center back in the USL, but you have to game plan around him a little bit more because he is a unique player in your back line. And Guillen and Doherty have the athleticism to cover for him. That's why you're putting them as the outside center backs in that shape. But it's something to watch if you're a Fiend or this Tampa Bay team against someone like San Antonio who can be explosive.
I mean, Lasso is going to turn 31 in May of this year.
Yeah.
Like I said, he had a kid and he's a little sleepy now. I mean, bro's just trying to catch up. Like, he's just tired. Real fast, I would like to hit this Knoxville versus Charlotte match just real fast. This one was fun. And Knoxville, I don't want to say showed us a little bit, because, I mean, John and I were both very vocal in not believing in the project, but they showed us why there should be glimmers of hope, and maybe the reason they didn't rebuild is because they had the tools already in the toolbox.
Yeah, I mean, me and bad preseason predictions, a pair like no other. I do think that in the context of this game, like, Knoxville ran back that 3-4-3 shape that they were using for a lot of last season. And it was really effective at getting them past the Charlotte press. Angelo Kelly-Rosales rightly won the Player of the Week award. And it's because he got the game-winning goal near to the end of the match. But the way that Rosales, a player who's a number 8 or a number 6 naturally, was used in the front line as this linking presence between the lines, getting in behind that press, was unreal for Knoxville all night long. really hard to take the ball off of him. He got that offense flowing. That's what impressed me for Knoxville. On the Charlotte side, I thought they really lacked explosion. I think it showed that they didn't have a proper number nine, like using Overton up there, Carlton Belmar subbing on late. Those are guys that I guess you could say like, okay, we're false nining it, or we're using a winger there just to change things up at the end of the game. The fact that they never went out and replaced Dane Kelly or Corey Bennett is going to be a red flag all season long until they address that issue. So maybe Charlotte is what we thought they were based on the preseason, but I think one Knox has more potential than I maybe considered early on.
I mean, 25 shots from this game from one Knox puts them second in USO 1, and the only team that's in front of them has played 2 games.
That is kind of nuts. That, yeah, chance creation wise, I just Gabriel Obertan like still play. It's just like a weird cognitive dissonance that I like experience whenever I see him, because it's like it just simply can't be the same human, like, and it is. So anyways,
playing in front of 6 people at Charlotte Independence. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I think one Knox showed us that there maybe is, like you said, John, I think there's a little bit more to this than what we thought. And maybe in a like Monterey Bay sort of way, like we think they didn't do enough in the offseason and really they were cooking.
Yeah, I guess for me, I mean, we kind of joked about it, John, on the League One breakdown, but we just kind of assumed that we were about to get WWE Dane Kelly walks through that door, and it didn't happen.
And then we're like, we're signing washed Carlton Belmar 2 days before the season starts.
Maybe Charlotte are still Charlotte. They had 1 year where they thought they could do it, and then their in-state rival says, we're getting promoted, idiot, and we're out. Like...
And like Noah Barra in this game, they didn't start Sorensen, who was a pretty big addition at left back. So they're going to get into the season, but I'm a hater and I'm going to hate.
Fair enough. Well, unless anybody has anything else they would like to discuss, let's go ahead and get into some predictions. I want to start off with Detroit City at home versus the People's Champ, Loudoun United. John.
So we didn't talk about Detroit today. I'm kind of in love with a lot of their performance against Colorado Springs. There was some defensive frailty for sure, but this team was transformed in attack. And given how highly I was talking about Loudoun earlier, like that's a team I hold in esteem. So the fact that I think this is going to be a draw probably says a lot about what I'm thinking about Danny Diccio era Detroit. So draw.
Phil?
Yep, I'm going with a draw as well, a scoring draw, which is odd for Detroit City heritage, but I think this is going to be a little bit of a fun one at Keyworth to open their home season, and yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit of a shootout between two teams that did impress me this past week.
Ryan?
Yeah, I'm going with a Detroit win in this one, just for the fact that Keyworth is a challenging place to go up to and play. And Detroit showed a lot of character to ground out the 2-1 win on the road against Colorado Springs. I do think this is going to be a very intriguing game. And technically, it is a top of the table clash for the Eastern Conference here this week. But Detroit wins at home.
I am also taking Detroit. I am in love with this Detroit City team, like in love with this Detroit City team. When last year we've been talking about how they're built from the back, their defense, right? When you have Devin Amumensa and Carroll playing center back together, and you have Michael Bryant playing right back, and you get to choose between Brett Levis or Villanueva as your left back, that's great. And if Villanueva can actually just have one position this year, maybe he'll excel like we think he can. Like, just allowing him to know where he's going to play is great.
They don't even need him. Levis was unreal all night long at left back.
And then, listen, Elvis Amo, it's been what they've been looking for since. I mean, Elvis Amo looks like he's the right fit. He seems like I love what they're doing. I'm taking Detroit at home. Let's go ahead now and let's talk about what we thought was going to be one versus two in the East, possibly in Louisville taking on Pittsburgh. John?
Yeah, this is my lock this week because I think Louisville is going to run over this Pittsburgh team. They were owned meatless against El Paso, and it didn't affect them too much, I would say, because Ray Serrano was really good in that front line. Adrian Perez, to me, wasn't really that involved, but I think he's going to have a banger against the Riverhounds. Granted, this is a Pittsburgh team that showed some improvement, especially with the ball, but they conceded after about 2 minutes flat against Orange County. There are some deeper rooted issues that I ultimately think Bob Lilly will figure out, but not this week against a team as good as Lou City.
Bill?
Yeah, I went with a Lou City win as well. I think my biggest hang up with Pittsburgh, despite the fact that I think John hit on the fact that they did really improve, and they actually were probably a Colin Shuttler away from getting a result in this match, and they were a bit unlucky to concede from both of the shots that Orange County took in the game, not just shots on target, but both shots that they took. I think the concern is with their forwards. Edward Kizza and Babacar Dien registered like a shot between the two of them in two games. Like, the ball is just not ending at the forwards, and there's something like just wrong about their buildup. It's Forbes, it's Mertz. Like, those are the only guys who are ending up with chances. And I think they're going to continue to struggle to create chances against a Louisville City team that presses extremely well and limited a lot of what El Paso was trying to do for much of the game. So, yeah, I think Lou City win this one, and Pittsburgh probably get left with more questions than answers.
Ryan?
Yeah, I've gone with Louisville winning this one as well. What's interesting here with this one is that you have to go back to the 2022 season to find the last time Pittsburgh and Bob Lilly lost three games in a row in the league when they lost in the middle of the year against Charleston, RGV, and Tampa Bay. And you have to go back to the start of the 2021 season to find the last time Pittsburgh began the year without a win in any of their first three games. And I just feel like they're coming into a Louisville team just at the wrong time in the season. And it's kind of just an unfortunate scheduling and start to the year, but Louisville wins at home.
Hold on. The last time they lost three in a row was the 2022 Charleston and RGV teams.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Whoa.
Okay.
All right. They were shut. Was this the summer of 2022? Do you have the... Charleston started playing this really wacky press where they were in like a 4-2-3-1, but they just kind of used all of their midfielders upfield all the time. And Pittsburgh like didn't even know what was happening. They beat that Charleston team beat Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh back to back weeks and then finished last in the East.
They were shut out by Charleston and RGV in consecutive weeks.
Woof.
That's like going to the Met Gala and then your house gets foreclosed on. Like, that's so crazy. just like the height, like luxury wins against like amazing teams and then just being the worst team in the whole league. It's insane.
And I think that was also the last time they were shut out in back-to-back losses within the same league, because they were shut out, obviously, at the end of last season in their playoff defeat.
Got Detroited.
Well, I guess they lost to Detroit, so they've already lost three matches in a row, technically.
If we're going to do the Max Verstappen win streak in a row...
I agree, no. But if you want to hang your hat on technicalities, I'm going Lou City. I'm going to go Lou City, honestly, just because this one's at home, because I do think that this, I do think that Lily will figure it out. But also, Louisville City fans know that this is Pittsburgh, right? They're going to be a little extra rowdy. I think that because this is at home, I'm taking Pittsburgh. Next up, a team we talked about a lot and a team that we should have talked about a little bit and had a lot of fun talking about, Phoenix versus Oakland Roots. And as John has called them, a bit of a chameleon. I really like how this Oakland Roots team looks. Can they get it done away from home versus Phoenix?
Yeah, I mean, Oakland last week, they got some sort of bug going around that made Erico Zidiasiano, a couple other players, miss out from their game. They had to turn to a teenage wingback making his debut. And they had an injury to a player in the midfield very early on in the game. Everything seemed against them with the Charleston Battery come to town. And they gritted out a result. 19-year-old Ilya Alexeyev got the goal that got them the draw in the end. Oakland has heart, and they've really done well with in-game adjustments so far. Given the fact that I was raring to go to like be very rude to Phoenix Rising, kind of out on this team right now, Oakland knows how to beat that system because Juan Guerra was playing it with the Roots way back when. I've got Oakland winning this one.
All right. Phil?
I'm going draw. I think what I saw from Oakland was like a team that definitely has, and maybe I'll eat these words because Paul Blanchett always seems to come up with these sorts of performances. Battery registered like 2.2 expected goals. They probably should have had like 3 on the night. I think they should have been comfortably like out of sight before the equalizer. The rest of the game, they probably should have found a winner at some point. Roots, for me, I think like them and Phoenix are going to kind of like meet each other. Like this is the battle of mid. They're just gonna like nullify what each other do. So I have it down as a draw.
Ryan?
Yeah, I have this one down as a draw as well. 3 of the last 4 meetings between these two teams in the league have been draws, and it seems like something that I think is going to be a bit challenging. One thing that Phoenix is going to have to really want to avoid is if they do not pick up a win in this game, it'll be the first time since 2019 they would have had their first 3 games of the season be without a win. And on the flip side, if Oakland just picks up 1 result, they will have their best 3-game start to a year in club history since they've joined USL. But I think it's going to be a draw.
This is self-imposed rules. I'm not allowed to pick draws. This feels like one, but also I just believe in Oakland a little bit more. You mentioned Paul Blanchett. This is stupid. Again, talk show, sports show. He's one of the best shot stoppers I've seen in the USL. I don't know about the distribution. I don't know about, you know, preventing follow-up shots. Brother puts body in front of ball better than anybody else. Like, it's ridiculous. And if he can have one of those matches where Phoenix probably only puts like 2 on target anyway, hard for me to overlook that. I'm going Oakland. For the last one of the night, 1 Knox versus Lexington. 1 Knox coming off of a win, and Lexington's, well, we've talked about it. This is one where there is this one a bourbon barrel, whiskey barrel? What are they fighting over? I don't know. They're fighting over something. Seems like, I don't know. I know the other one is North Carolina or like West Virginia, Kentucky, but whatever they're fighting over, it's a
between
rivalry.
The Henny Darby, the Jägermeister Cup, and apparently a bourbon barrel. We've really got like an alcohol problem in League One.
I mean, that's the least shocking sentence of the show.
I mean, no, but in terms of this game, I think the aspects of the independence that 1 Knox took an advantage of, Lexington doesn't allow. I've kind of been out on the Lexington attack so far. I think it's been one-sided. I think they've struggled to access the middle of the pitch. But they sit back in a really well-organized 4-4-2. they know how to stop you from getting in between the lines. That's going to do well against One Knox. I picked this game before the result tonight, but you can bet Lexington is really going to want to go out and get a win after losing this match against Vermont Green. So feeling very good about a Lexington dub on the weekend.
The one other aspect here, I have Lexington winning as well. And the one other thing is that One Knox plays tomorrow night against Asheville City in the Open Cup. So they actually get a day less of recovery after this one as well.
That one's for a battle of the boot. That one's an actual rivalry from the league 2 days. So
I actually do love that as well. I think that should actually be a really good match, because I think Asheville City is another very serious like league two side. So that should be a fun one to watch. But I think it's a small detail, but I think it's the sort of stuff that over the course of a league one season, like, has a big say, and scheduling stuff like that, you know. It's like, will the travel from Vermont or the one day more of recovery be the difference? I think Lexington, with a bloodied lip, like, come out and are looking to get revenge. And I think they get the win.
Yeah, I've gone with One Knox in this one. I'm not sure if the travel will play too much of a role, because it's only 116 miles between Asheville and Knoxville for this one. And playing this one at home, I think, certainly helps for that. But, I mean, you've mentioned it before that you have Lexington coming off an absolutely thrilling contest that was incredibly tiring, but incredibly just invigorating to watch. One interesting thing I saw from last year's Open Cup was both of these teams lost in the same round of last season in the second round. And when they came out into their immediately following match at first after that elimination, neither team won. You had Lexington get a 0-0 result against Fort Madison, and One Knox gets a 2-1 defeat against Chattanooga. I'm going to take Knoxville in this one, just the old mantra of League One, they're playing at home. But it should be a very interesting contest to see how both teams kind of refocus their attention moving forward.
Yeah, I was about to say, update, Austin FC 2 has leveled it up against 4OSC. And you say it's only a couple, like 100.5 miles, basically. But if you've ever taken the drive between Asheville and Knoxville, that is a horrid drive. It's beautiful, but it's horrible. Like, that stretch of interstate, and also the stretch of interstate between Chattanooga and Knoxville, it's not that far, except it is, because it's always gridlock. It's weirdly exhausting. Meanwhile, I think a flight might be easier on the body than having to be on the bus for like 5 hours. I don't know. Maybe I'm projecting how I feel. I'm not buying into what Lexington's putting down right now. And I don't know, maybe a part of this, and I predicted it before the match started, but also watching Lexington never practice set pieces once in their life is now really making me confirm what I say. I think it's going to be One Knox. One Knox is at home. Lexington, I'm just not believing in it. I'm just not right now. I'm not saying they can't do it, but just right now, just not believing in it. I'm going with One Knox. If I just want to just throw this out there, we're not going to predict it. But if you want to see what could possibly turn into a very, very, very chippy match, Hartford versus Birmingham, and that's where all I'm going to say about that. Let's see. I want to just quickly, before we end tonight's show, Spokane and Rhode Island. They opened up their home ventures. Rhode Island opened up their first ever match. And first off, both of those venues just looked like a madhouse. It looked like a ton of fun. Spokane Stadium is beautiful. I know we kind of memed on the Rhode Island pole, but also kind of, I know it was awesome too. And to see the New Mexico go and play villain, that was awesome to watch, because that showed some real like gutsy, some real moxie from New Mexico. And then to see the way the crowd exploded when totally not an own goal goes in, just unbelievable. Spokane, the vibes looked amazing. I mean, I don't think that the TV angle does it justice because you can't see the massive grandstand that's on the other side. That was packed. The USL is looking very bright in those two markets right now.
The fact that that is not Rhode Island's, like, that is a one-year temporary venue while their actual venue, like, is built and finished, that is, like, such a good sign, I think, because if a, like, little broadcast, like, if that broadcast, like, the poll in the broadcast is the meme of the Rhode Island season, like, while it's in a packed building that is like a fantastic surface, like amazing atmosphere, and a team that lived up to, like, obviously not on the score sheet, but like in terms of the production, in terms of the way that they play, the style of play against a good opponent, like, this Rhode Island team is still very, very real. They were, I mean, poor Clay Holstad, the guy, like, was the post away from two goal of the week contenders, like, and absolute bangers to start off the Rhode Island career. Like, I don't know how he didn't find the back of the net, because what a couple of strikes there. And they sort of just had that, like, first game in the USL sort of moment where the ball's allowed to bounce on a set piece and it just goes wrong for them at the other end. But they get the dramatic equalizer and, like, that great moment, that first goal. And yeah, I think they are every bit as dangerous as advertised. And the crowd was just like, yeah, it was exactly the type of start that you would have wanted if you're Rhode Island, apart from just not quite grabbing the 3 points.
I will say, we are in USL Championship history, still unbeaten since 2019 in expansion team's first home game of their club history.
What?
Yeah, I mean,
wait.
No expansion team has ever lost their first home game since before 2019. So it's been 5 years since an expansion team lost their first game at home.
It was.
I'm pretty sure Birmingham lost to Bethlehem Steel in 2019.
And yeah, I was saying
since 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
El Paso was, like, lost theirs as well. Memphis.
Everybody lost in 2019.
Everybody lost.
Not including
Loudoun did not lose their 2019 home opener. They drew 3-3 with Bethlehem Steel.
And they've been elite ever since then.
And Austin won 1-0 at Circuit of the Americas as well.
Okay, so starting 2020. Post 2019
COVID year onwards, no one's losing their first home game.
Yeah,
got it.
Speaking to the Rhode Island experience, like, obviously the production value amazing, the stadium and the crowd looked great. On the field, I was so impressed with the way that Connor Smith had organized that team's press. They were so energetic, so organized. Everything about the scheme was just fantastic. I think they're really going to be a threat in the East. Shout out, and just a double down, Phil. Clay Holstad was so good in the central midfield. I think he had 12 recoveries, a couple tackles on top of that. Every time he got the ball, he was looking upfield immediately and just moving. So impressive from him. And I mean, continuing a theme, another player coming from Columbus Crew too, because that team was just loaded in Next Pro last year. On Spokane, if you thought Rhode Island looked good, I thought that stadium looked probably even better.
Yeah.
And they get on the score sheet with that weird kind of half cross, half shot thing from Romain Metnire, but you take what you can get in front of that home crowd. 5,000 plus, I think, was the attendance.
Yep.
And it looked fuller than that, honestly. So shout out Spokane for doing it right and really anchoring the West Coast in League One.
I would love to see more alternate angles within the game so we can see that giant grandstand, because I believe it was Joshua Duder who was taking the videos from Protagonist. And also videos, our Smith Video Production was up there as well, took some fun videos and pictures. That grandstand looks awesome. Like, just so cool. One thing with Rhode Island real fast, if their legs can hold up for 34 matches, that they're a nightmare. I just don't know how their legs can do it. I don't think it's physically possible for you to press that much and survive.
They're pretty deep. Like, that's the thing about this roster, is there was a real debate of who's starting where coming into this game. And I mean, you saw late in the game, right? Gabriel Alves, Mark Doyle, Prince Sadie, Connor McGlynn all come off the bench and they fight back and get that draw. Like, I know we are very Kano positive on this show, but what he's done to help assemble that squad is ridiculously good right now.
There's also a part of it. This is stupid. Marcus Ugarte, his assistant coach, who's another former Legion player, also was a star on the Bob Lilly, Rhinos team. Like, he was on that Rochester team. And this is so stupid, but you can see parts of it. Like, you're seeing the fun parts of Nate Miller's system, because Kano and Nate Miller did all their coaching badges together. You can see a little bit of the Tommy Sohn, in there as well. You see a little bit of the Bob Lilly. I think you're seeing it, 2-3 really great minds mesh and create this really fascinating high press system that doesn't rely on Koke Vegas being just tiki-taka all the way up the pitch. They're also playing it long. You can't, if you get lulled to sleep, they're not afraid to go over the top. And guess who's over the top waiting for you? Albert Dequa. He missed so many chances. And I'll say that Tam Bacchus had a fantastic match. Like, Al Tam Bacchus had an amazing match.
Quietly on a heater to start 2024. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not being very good last year, like
after being Taylor's favorite guy to knock,
did not like
nine saves against Rhode Island, and a couple of them very not routine.
Just unreal. I had a blast, loved watching it. Super excited to see if they can keep up the hype. Can I tell you something that bothers me with the stadium? That's not the pole. The logo is not centered on the dot.
Yeah.
It's a very derpy looking dog, and then it's not even centered. What's going on at Barron Stadium?
The end zone, the letters are not in line with the 6-yard box, but it's also not where the goal is. So there's just letters. The derpy dog is there, not lined up at the center. Freaks me out, but it's fine.
Well, and I mean, as far as like first venues in first seasons in USL Championship and with a planned start at their own venue, I will gladly take the derpy dog and the off center. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm all about it. I think just everything that Rhode Island has done, like, this was sort of the nice capstone to, they've behaved very, very professionally from the beginning. They've approached this project in a very, like, just a very serious manner. And it's all paying off with like a nice start, nice way to build some momentum with the fans, and bigger and bigger things to come from this Rhode Island team, I think.
All right. Anything else before we go? Final thoughts? All right. Let's go ahead and start it off. John, final thoughts for the night.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know what day it was. I rewatched the movie Speed, where Keanu Reeves is on the bus that's going to explode if it drops below going 50 miles an hour. That's an absolute classic of the really dumb but fun genre. Like, every single line read is almost this mix of embarrassingly bad but really funny at the same time. So yeah, I'll go to war for Speed as a classic film of the 90s.
Phil?
Yeah. Wow. I'm always interested to see, like, okay, what film is, what cinema is John going to open me up to this week? And Speed. I'm glad. I was having a conversation with someone about the career and works of Nicolas Cage today. So, extremely underrated. The movie that I will pitch, I've not watched recently, but there is actually a movie for which Nicolas Cage received an Academy Award nomination for Best Actor called Adaptation. That is one of the most disturbing films I've ever seen in my life. Nicolas Cage is incredible. And I know that sounds stupid because you're like, it's Nicolas Cage. Is he not just like Nicolas Cage? And the answer is yes, but it's also no. And it's also one of the finest films I've ever seen. And I have never felt more truly disturbed, like having finished a film. It was just like probably the strangest like that I've ever felt watching any film. And it is, yeah, it is a unique experience. It's so good. So if you're looking
if you
for a weird...
If you're somebody who hasn't seen Adaptation and you want the pitch, it's Nicolas Cage playing brothers. So there's two of them. Like, I think that's enough. Yeah.
Yep.
Ryan?
Yeah, just another continued shout out for Shogun on FX or Hulu. The most recent episode definitely ended on a pretty intriguing note just for where the story should be headed moving forward. So looking forward to just seeing more of the season.
Beautiful.
I wish I could do a John Blackthorne impression, really get that insane yelling on.
He hit somebody with an insult that I was... the dude
cannot repeat on the show.
No, but the insult that he, anyways, just one of the funniest. It like had me bursting out laughing.
You kind of mentioned like Nick Cage and stuff. I was talking to my wife about it. Like, Nick Cage is not typecasted because he plays a lot of things, but he's also always just Nick Cage, but he's not, but he is. Because it's kind of like Daniel Radcliffe. I'm like, oh, look, it's Harry Potter. Every time I watch someone Nick Cage, and it's like, this is supposed to be very serious, and I'm supposed to feel something, but also Nick Cage is looking at me like he's about to steal the Declaration of Independence. I don't know. Like, freaks me out. I'm finishing up an article. I say finishing up. I'm in the middle of it. It's Where Are They Now? And I'm taking every single player who's played for Birmingham Legion and trying to figure out where they are now.
This is awesome.
So I'm writing short bios on like 100 players, and some of them are really interesting. Some of them are not, but most interesting one so far, Joe Nasco, I believe.
Yes. Classic.
So he played for the Hammers, and then he came back and was like GK3 at like 37, stuck around for a while and became an actual police department. Like, he became a sheriff, an actual sheriff. And then he went to Red Wolves to be their goalkeeping coach. I don't know. Just an interesting fella that I've found along the way.
He's an Atlanta Silverbacks NASL legend. Let me tell you that.
Yeah, there's a couple of other goodies in there, and I'm starting to get to ones where it's like, I don't even have to look up what happened. I know where they are. There's a few of them that I didn't even know happened. Like, this player retired before he played a single minute. And it's like, I don't remember that at all. Who is that? And it's always fun to go into those deep dives of people who made it on the roster that you've never heard of. So
does it make it easier that a quarter of the players you're looking at are just like, oh, they're on Memphis 901 now?
The amount of times that they are currently playing for Memphis I've written so far is kind of ridiculous. Not having a good time with that, I'll be honest. It's okay.
I mean, that's a fun Jägermeister drinking game part of your article.
Hashtag out.
Yeah, by the way, the Jägermeister USL show, we are here for it.
Yeah, we are for sale.
We need to start putting this at the beginning of every show. We are for sale. If you want to buy your club's love for us and say, like, if you send us a hat, I'll wear the hat. I'll support the hat. We will be the Loud and United USL show. I'm not afraid.
How much would be your price if Memphis sent you stuff?
I'd do a giveaway.
I was gonna say Kaylor, earlier with the Rhode Island thing, you were like, New Mexico United playing the villains, and I'm like, they are my villains every single day. That's not a new role for them.
This is true. But yeah. So yeah, let's close it up, I suppose. Thank you all so much for watching. This has been a fun week, long week. Keep enjoying the US Open Cup. Keep spamming Twitter, X, Bird app. And also, by the way, if you see anything with links from any of the soccer creators, please just like retweet the crap out of them, even if you don't read them, because the algorithm hates links and a lot of really good hard work is getting lost in the shuffle. So please, at least if you find a link, share it to places. Our Discord has a self-promotion. Please just share crap. There's a lot of hard work that's not getting noticed anymore because of algorithms. So please, 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 please share that around. Yeah, I think that is all. Thank you all so much for watching. And even though he was not here, he missed out on a great win, but we still love him. Noted hoodie maker, here's Alan's voice.
Thank you for watching another episode of the USL Show.
The USL Show is now proudly part of the Protagonist podcast family. Please go to protagonistsoccer.com to check out more work. Thanks for stopping by, and we'll see everyone again next time.